Welcome to Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon, a production of iHeartRadio. Sports fans, golf fans, or just fans, it is another episode. It is the lucky episode 13 of Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon. I am Shane Bacon, joined each and every week by our PGA Tour pro Max Homa. I say that, Max, because we actually have golf news to talk about on this episode.
We've got some news. We have a schedule, a little bit of happiness mixed in with that schedule. Who knows if it's true, but it sure does feel good to just to dream a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since you've played the opening round of the Players, and that was kind of it. And of course, everybody's been at home following orders and following protocol. But the revised 2020 schedule for the PGA Tour, 2019-20 schedule, it kicks off early June, Charles Schwab Challenge at Colonial, then RBC Heritage, Travelers, Rocket Mortgage, John Deere, Memorial, 3M, FedEx St. Jude, Barracuda, PGA Championship, Wyndham, Northern Trust, BMW, and Tour Championship at the end of August, early September. And then we get into some of the majors that... Can I just say real quick, everybody at the PGA Tour's website, you guys are great with information, but my God, it was confusing to find the scheduling on the website. Just, I used to write all the time for a living. I blogged for a living. Just do a, here's your PGA Tour updated schedule, and just list it. It'll be a copy paste, take you 4 seconds for the post, and there you go. I just got you 100,000 clicks. But of course, the majors are after that.
100,000.
Our U.S. Open and Wingfoot.
Maybe 40.
14th through the 20th of September. We have a Masters starting in November. It is craziness, but at least we have a blueprint, Max, of what looks like something of a PGA Tour schedule. First things first, your thoughts on the dates, the time, the return, and all that.
Yeah, I obviously just excited to see a schedule. I had heard that the Charles Schwab was just being moved. So knew that wasn't going to be played in May. Glad that there's, you know, still starting with it. It's one of my favorite events personally. It's also extremely easy to get to given all the travel restrictions. So getting to Dallas-Fort Worth is easy for just about everybody. You know, honestly, I looked at the schedule. I don't think that there's, you know, anything good, bad, whatever. I feel very, very bad for the tournaments that got canceled because I know growing up, my favorite thing every year was going to Riviera for the LA Open. So I am bummed for them. But yeah, I couldn't have cared less, honestly, what events were being played. And this, once we knew, you know, we were going to get pushed back till May or June. So I'm just happy to see some. The travel is obviously not quite as simple compared to
what's the approach? What's the approach with travel in terms of how you, caddies, players, how everybody's, I mean, again, things change day to day, but what is your approach to travel, if you will, starting now as you get set for your schedule? And also, what's the tour going to do to kind of help you guys get around and be able to play in these things?
Yeah, I have, first of all, for the latter part of that question, I haven't heard how this is going to work, if we're just going to do it like normal, but I'm sure that they will figure something out. I also am hoping by then we have a lot less restrictions because things have gotten, you know, hopefully significantly better. But yeah, usually, you know, you play a lot of these events in the same regions. And as I look at them, you know, already right off the bat, we're going from Dallas-Fort Worth, like I said, is very easy to get into. And then we have to get to Hilton Head, which I haven't been to yet, but I know that's a difficult spot to get to. And then you go up to Connecticut. So there's a lot less rhyme and reason to the actual, I think, travel portion of the schedule. But the events themselves obviously are going to be great venues to go to, because it must mean that they're more prepared to host something on a, you know, on less time. For me, you know, setting the schedule, I talked to, you know, my wife a lot about it, about, you know, what she thinks, where she likes to go, where I like to go, where I think I've played well. And then the biggest conversation is always between me and Joe. I'm actually looking at his schedule here. He has beautiful handwriting, by the way, Joe. I'm very impressed. Very small, but very, very legible.
Is it all caps or cursive? What does he go with?
It is all caps. It's very small, but it is just very neat. But yeah, so we were talking today. I know I want to play the first three coming back. You know, like I said, Charles Schwab, I love that course. RBC Heritage and Hilton Head. Never done that one before, but want to get that one under my belt. So I know for the future, if I, you know, it's going to be a staple of my schedule. And Travelers, I've never made the cut there in two tries, but I've actually always really liked the golf course and I've actually played pretty well there both times going in. I don't know, something funky went on and still almost made the cut. So I've just had weird things happen at that event. So I feel like that'll be a good one for me. So the difficult part for us today, we were actually chatting about it, was whether we were going to play the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit or the John Deere. Both events I really enjoy, but this is where the travel and the kind of little interesting things come into play, because, you know, Memorial is the week after John Deere, and Memorial is one of my favorite events I've been to. It's a phenomenal course for me. So it's one I'm definitely going to play. But Rocket Mortgage is, there's an MGM property in Detroit and it's free for me to stay there. So, you know, I know people like, you know, a lot of these things do come down to that. I love the John Deere. The people of the John Deere. I honestly love the Quad Cities. I've had some really fun memories there and fun event or fun tournaments at the John Deere, but it's more likely than not going to get bumped just because, you know, the Rocket Mortgage has a sponsor, not obligation, but it has a sponsor attachment to it. So, also, I really like the golf course there last year. So it's just very, very tricky. Before, you know, we started recording, Shane, I was talking to Lacey about this. She made up a good point to kind of mention how difficult it is, or it used to be, to make a schedule when you don't have full status, like I fortunately do right now. And that's something I feel for the guys that don't know what they're going to get into, because usually we have a pretty good feel, like the John Deere, everyone gets into because it's a part of the schedule that doesn't, you know, a lot of people don't like to play the week before the open. And so, you know, you're going to get into that one. You know, you're going to get into a few other ones based off of past years. Well, this year we have a completely new year. No one has a freaking clue. I mean, I'm assuming everyone's playing the Charles Schwab. Like everybody wants to go play some golf.
It's going to look like the Players' Championship field.
It really will.
For Charles Schwab, it's going to be nuts.
The Players' Championship field with no fans. Yeah, it's going to be sweet. So yeah, and maybe the John Deere, hopefully for them, like, you know, you get a huge, huge name. Like Jordan used to go there all the time. So who knows? But I feel bad because we were talking about how difficult it is to play an event when you get in late in the week. You know, maybe you find out. I've had events where I found out Sunday night I got in the event, or even Monday, and I just had a flight booked for Monday at some point, and you fly in, you don't have a hotel book, so everything's more expensive. The flights, you know, if you hadn't had one, it's way more expensive. You're usually taking a red eye. It's just such a, not a recipe for success. So that's going to stink. That's going to be a very interesting wrinkle of all of this. I feel very fortunate given, you know, this whole virus situation and how we're going to be coming back at in a strained time, or at least at an expedited time, that I know I can play in these events, right, minus, you know, a couple of the majors.
So Max, real quick, you've got Schwab, RBC, and Travelers checked for sure.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure Rocket Mortgage.
Okay, so then John Deere's probably out, is what I'm hearing from you. Memorial, and then you're in Memorial.
Yeah.
3M out.
I would most likely, see, that's the other thing, is we just want to keep playing golf. So I'll most likely be playing the 3M. I very much enjoyed it. I actually like all of these events. That's the thing, which makes it difficult. And that's what's always kind of a pain with making these schedules, is like I've made relationships with people at all these events. And sometimes just when you start getting into the bigger pursed events and such like that, like you have to make a business decision, and it stinks to say, but you know, I'm not going to just play seven in a row to play seven in a row. And if there's one that's going to be a bigger, you know, the Memorial is one of the biggest events of the season. Right. Like if you're in it, you're going to play, especially if you like the golf course, which I do. So it'll be interesting. Plus then it all depends. Like if I'm in the WGC and if I'm in the PGA Championship, and you know, obviously going forward, that gets even bigger when you talk about the playoffs and all that. So yeah, it's very, very tricky. But I feel fortunate. I'm in a very good position to make these decisions. Plus I'm having a solid season so far. So it's not nearly as, life and death is obviously a complete over-exaggeration, but for lack of a better term, for your season, it's not like a make or break decision. You're just trying to set yourself up for the best success you can. But I mean, at this point, Joe and I talked about it. We're ready just to play as many as we need to play. Been riding the Peloton as much as possible. So we are ready to go.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I mean, you and I have talked off the podcast about motivation. I mean, everybody's motivation currently in the state of affairs we're in, it can go up and down. I mean, I've had it where I've had a week where I didn't feel like doing anything at all because there's not a lot to be done to begin with. I feel like when you got the schedule, either emailed to you or you saw it online or it was presented to the players, there had to have been a little bit relief just knowing that at least you had a date to prepare for, as opposed to just going, I'm going to go hit range balls today. There's not a lot to go hit range balls for if there's not a date on the calendar. At least now you have one on the calendar.
Yeah, exactly. I was actually talking to DJ Pie about this and just about how it was refreshing to get, like you said, get a date and get something to work towards. I think what's frustrating nowadays, especially with social media, is I know a ton of people were on Twitter mentioning how there's no way this is going to happen. And this, you know, how could this possibly work by then? And just all the skepticism and negativity towards it. And listen, I get it. Like I get all the concerns. I get that this might just be a very tentative idea and tentative start back date, but like, why can't we just enjoy it? Like it's not hurting anybody to enjoy it. I know that everyone these days just wants to be right and be able to come back and say, yeah, I told you so. And I get it. That's fine. But like, how about we just enjoy some sort of happiness for a minute? It's not harming anybody. If it doesn't come back, it doesn't come back, but give us something to do. Give us something to think about. Give the fans something to think about. Give everybody in the golf business something to think about. I don't think that it's a bad thing if it gets, you know, pushed back further, because that means that it's the safe thing to do. But it's also okay to just say, hey, this is what we're planning on. Because this is like the first time, I would say last week was the least I've thought about golf in a while. I didn't really need to hit balls in my net. I didn't play much. And then, you know, we played some golf yesterday. And then today, you know, I was very much in my net working on stuff again, because I do feel a lot more motivated.
In your net. I like that. Yeah. I was in my net. Can we start using that?
I mean, yeah, I'm in the net.
Say, hey, man, I can't chat right now. I'm in the net, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, I couldn't. I had the phone in the camera holder. But, yeah, so it just felt good. It feels like your brain's a little bit turned on more towards some sort of process. So that'll be good. But, yeah, I mean, I wanted to add a story, though, before we move on about all this that Lacey had reminded me of, about the whole being in limbo and not knowing if you're going to be in an event or not, because it is a lot more complicated than people understand. I'm not going to go all the way into it because it just takes too long. But, you know, let's just say, you know, a field's 144 people. If you're the 145th man and somebody withdraws on Tuesday, like you're in the event, so you can go, like you're ready to go. So whether you're there or not, like you have that opportunity. So these things happen all the time, but usually they happen on a Sunday. So, you know, I've gone through that a lot. It's always a pain. You don't know if you're going to have to rent a house or go to a hotel and, you know, trying to save money at times, or at least not get completely hosed. So last year I win the Wells Fargo and gets me into the PGA Championship. The PGA Championship is only 1 week later. I get one, you know, the next week was Byron Nelson. I end up skipping it, but I have 1 week to find a place, and it's New York. Like New York's not very cheap. It's a major. It's my first PGA. I'm very excited. My coach's going to come. Obviously my caddy's going to come. He has to. And Lacey's going to come. So we're like, let's rent a house for all of us. And it'll be really fun. Very excited. So we do, but find a house. It was way overpriced, but I mean, totally understandable. We're not complaining about it. People spent a lot more money on their houses, but way overpriced, you know, 2 days, basically 3 days before the event. Well, we get there and, you know, anybody who's done an Airbnb, it's supposed to be your place. Like it's your house for the week. Obviously you need to be respectful, but it's your house. Well, we walk in, the guy is there at the house, the host, and he's, you know, kind of talking. He's telling us, it's already uncomfortable, but hey, listen, I mean, whatever, no big deal. Well, he's, you know, kind of telling us how he's never done this before, but his daughter had mentioned, you know, it's PGA Championship this week. You could make a good amount of coin. So obviously a great idea. He's telling us all about this, talking about how he plays. Now it's like getting the uncomfortable, like we've been in this house for 15 minutes thing, and he's still talking and not leaving the house that is ours for the week. Well, he sees my car out front and I panic and don't come up with a good enough lie, but I say, yeah, I just, you know, I'm playing. And he goes, oh, like, you know, oh, it's too many questions. Then he asked me if I could get his friend a signed flag. All these, and I'm like, you know, I already felt so uncomfortable. I'm like, this is not a good start, but whatever. We get in the house. He finally leaves. We get in the house. We're making the most of it. The house is, I mean, I don't really care, but the house was pretty dirty and like, didn't really smell the best, but oh, well, like no problems there. Well, the next day we go practice and Lacey goes and does something on her own. And my coach and, you know, Joe are there by that point. And we get back and Lacey had put something in somewhere downstairs in the downstairs bathroom, and it had been moved. And it could only have been moved by one person, and that's the guy coming back to the house. And then he had mentioned that he was back at the house at some point that day. And we're like, bro, you are not allowed back in here. Like, this isn't like your house right now. Like, this is right. Our house. We felt so uncomfortable, and it just stunk because we spent a bunch of money. We did get a refund, but we spent a bunch of money that was like over, you know, we overpaid for a place because we had last minute. I'm trying to play a major that I'm like super stoked on, and it's really, really hard. So like, I don't really have a lot of energy to be like expelling towards this. So we end up moving into like a hotel. But those are the things that happen when you have like these last minute.
Right.
Yeah. So that's what's going to happen, I think, a lot, unfortunately, in these next few events that if we do get to play, because you know, there hasn't been a lot of planning going on. And even, you know, we found a couple Airbnbs for the next couple places, and I wouldn't be surprised if they got, you know, upcharged, you know, they get canceled and upcharged, because we know obviously now that the tournament's coming to town and it's a great price and they haven't really upped it yet. So we'll see. But those are the funny things that happen. I mean, they're funny when you look back on them. They're not really very funny when they first happen.
Yeah, the house rental is, it's obviously massively popular, as it should be, because it's an alternative to going to a hotel and paying whatever you pay at a hotel. But you can get some absolute duds. I've slept on a couple of beds that I don't understand how anybody would have purchased the bed to begin with. It had to have been an online order. Yeah. You're on it going, nobody can enjoy sleeping on this thing. It is horrible. So that's the Max Homa prepared schedule as of now.
Yeah.
And like we said, it got a couple of months to get ready for it.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
We were talking last week about the nerdy leave your golf glove in your back pocket thing that we all do when we leave the golf course, and you realize you did it at a bar and you kind of feel a little self-conscious. We had a listener. I'm not going to reveal his name because I don't want to get him in too much trouble. But he said he snuck out on a round of golf when he should be working, and said he got to work and he's in his golf clothes and polo, but no big deal. Nobody noticed. And he said that he had a coworker boss say, "Why is there a golf glove in your pocket?" after he was in the clear. So he'd gone to work post play golf before work and was cruising around work, you know, just whistling throughout his day, not to real. Now, that is worse than the go to the restaurant and the bar, is if you go play before work and show up to work with the golf glove in your back pocket. That's not as good as the stories we were telling.
That is definitely that could have been a deal breaker for the boss.
That's right.
That could have been really bad. I mean, that's past embarrassment. That's up there with like a very dangerous mistake for your livelihood.
Other thing we did, you and I were a part of this past week, the MGM Grand or MGM Hotels and everyone in their partnership and their foundation put on a poker tournament with a whole bunch of celebrity golfers. I'm going to put you under the umbrella of celebrity golfers.
I really appreciate that.
No problem. You were one of the marquee names. There was one of the graphics said Legends of the Game. And I had to write "and Max Homa" on there because there actually were.
Super fair. Daly was in there.
And Julie Inkster, Annika Sorenstam. Yeah. Like real Hall of Famers. But it was a poker tournament. It was just to raise money. I was going to play in it, and then they asked me to host it. And so I hosted it. We ended up raising somewhere in the $150,000 range
for the
employees of the MGM and the MGM properties. So way to go, everybody that was a part of that. Would you say loose with your poker play? Because you didn't win and you didn't advance off your table. How would you assess the way you played in terms of approach to that particular poker tournament?
Well, Shane, interesting you mentioned it, because it's in my proudest moment of the week.
No way.
One of the flights. Yeah, because no, I did not get past advanced past my table. But every table had a professional poker player at it, which was not cool. Shout out to Keith Mitchell, by the way. He bumped out Phil Hellmuth, which is just forever bragging rights. We had Maria Ho at ours. She was awesome, super funny, much better at this than I. I won. I had Colin Morikawa, Colt Knost, Troy Merritt, Joel Damon, and Maria and Johnny Vegas, who Johnny didn't even show up to do it. So he ended up getting fourth at our table just by the blind. So he beat half of us. I fortunately beat Johnny. Colt, Joel, and I had a bet. Whoever was first out had to pay, had to donate to the MGM Foundation. The whole reason they were putting it on. So Joel was out really quick. I mean, shocker! Joel was out quick. Short attention span, loose. I mean, he wasn't
in
ready.
He was loose in every regard. Every he was regard. Loose in he the way he was playing.
Loose. Yeah,
he was loose in maybe possibly the cocktails that he was serving himself. The word of the day in his regard was loose.
He was a loose guy. So I was proud. I was the leading leader at the table for a little bit. Got very, very. This is it. It was the reason why I'm not good at poker, nor do I love poker. I got kind of bored. It started going too slow. I wasn't paying enough attention to how Troy had been playing. I also wasn't paying great attention to the cards. I saw the flop, knew I had top pair. Really, just kind of started firing. Everyone was Troy was firing back at me. I was like, there's just not really any way you have what you have. Well, he did. I got knocked down, but I was very proud of how I hung in there. Ended up getting third at the table.
Including a pro.
So technically second.
Yeah, you were second amateur.
Great. I know people call it the first loser, but I was the low am. I mean, it was fun. I had a fun time chopping it up with the guys and Maria. Maria was really cool. I wish we weren't actually like playing so I could have learned something from her, other than that she's just like significantly better than me at this. But it was fun. I thought they did a great job. Hopefully they do something like that again, or we could just all do it for fun. Because it was pretty entertaining.
Also entertaining is something you were doing on social with Travis Matthew, of course, a sponsor of yours. It was the hashtag Stay Homa Challenge. Is that what it was called?
Exactly, Shane.
Golly, just setting you up right here. You know what? Travis Matthew sent me the green Augusta polo that Max was supposed to be rocking because that color is sweet.
It's but go sweet. Ahead.
What'd you do with what was this? Because it was a little bit of an outfit roast. Is that what it was?
Yeah. So it took the swing roast to the outfit roast. Shane, I am happy that you participated and you didn't even get roasted. It was funny. We were talking about this the other day, but when I first saw that picture. So for everybody who hasn't seen it, Shane, explain. You're in a romper, like a
yeah. So Chris Solomon, of course, who is one of the guys, one of the co-founders of No Lane Up. Solly and I, for a long time, had a major championship bet, him versus myself, and we would pick random categories like, you know, like low Melvin or something. And it would be, you know, low amateur, you know, low 50-plus-year-old at the Masters, and we'd pick these five or six categories. The loser had to do something ridiculous. He one time had a shotgun, a monster on course. Yeah, he had a shotgun, a monster.
I did that with the Red Bull ones. I thought I was going to die.
Such a horrible idea. Everybody just looks awful after. Shotgunning an energy drink or chugging an energy drink is way worse than any chugging of alcohol, for sure, especially immediately to your body. But I lost one of the bets. I had to wear a bacon romper, so a romper that was bacon print. I had to order it online. It was way more expensive than I should have.
Your last name's Bacon.
Yeah. It's because my. That was it. I never put the two and two together. So it was a Bacon romper, and I had to play a round of 18 holes with Chris in Florida in my Bacon romper.
And it's a pretty funny outfit. I didn't completely what do you call the leggings under it? Because you were cold.
Oh, God. I got so much shit from those guys for it. I wore leggings. I woke up in the morning in Florida. It was like 45, 50 degrees.
And these shorts are not long.
They are Daisy Duke level. I mean, they are high. They are. Listen, let me just say this. You'd rather see me in the leggings without the leggings.
I
promise you that. I
was very appreciative of the leggings. By the way, is shotgunning an energy drink like smelling salts for your heart?
It's like jolts.
Like you make, like instead of maybe doing like the whole clear and like doing the defibrillator, I don't know how to say that word.
I think you got
they
it
should
right.
just they should just shotgun a Red Bull down your
well,
down your throat.
Tom Brady on the sidelines and a little shake and they're bringing out the
back.
Red Bull and it's
back.
Not even the sugar free.
So we did the outfit roast like I've been doing the swing roast. You had to tag Travis Matthew and myself and the stay hashtag the Stay Home a Challenge. We got a ton of good ones. I mean, some of them really made me laugh. I did a few a day, and then on Monday, which should be today, I'm gonna get this right one time.
You nailed it.
Yeah. we're doing like a
live. Oh, wow. You know what you just did? You got something right. And you were so proud of yourself, you lost your train of thought.
Then we're going to do... No, I was still rolling. I was just...
Were you?
I was mentally applauding myself.
Okay,
so I took a little break. You know how like a comedian will say a joke and then he like waits for everybody to finish laughing? I was waiting for my brain to stop clapping for itself. So I could move on. Now I might be losing my train of thought now. So we're doing an IG live, Instagram live for the people who don't have Instagram. That's like a little slang. You say IG.
Wow. So hold on 1 second. So this was... This was just about 3.5-4 months ago that Max was anti Instagram, and now you're even using the terms that only really the insiders know.
I mean, hey.
I'm IG in it. IGL.
I don't like to just dip a toe in the water, Shane. I just jump right on in.
By the way, there's no chance anybody knows what's going on with the Stay Home a Challenge after I've interrupted you 9 times. You're going to announce on Monday a winner.
I don't even know what it is. We're doing it on Instagram live tomorrow. 5 winners will be chosen. I don't even really know what you win. I think you win like a Travis Matthew bundle, I would assume. Maybe you win a monster, but you have to shotgun it. Not particularly sure. But yeah, we will be going on. It should be fun. But it's been fun. Some of these outfits are tremendous. So that'll be a good time for the 5 people who win.
Yeah, we've got some get a grip tees coming soon. Should we send the winner some tees?
Yeah, let's send the winner some tees.
We'll send them a bag of get a grip
tees. 10,000 tees.
We got so many tees.
And we have no golf to be played.
There's no golf. You're just gonna have your bag. Joe's gonna be like, "What's in this pocket?" Be like, "Well, more of the tees, obviously."
Obviously,
Joe. By the end of this podcast, Joe's gonna hate me so much because all I'm doing is weighing your bag down more and more.
Let's do a brick giveaway, just like
okay, well,
or a gold bar giveaway.
We have moon rock giveaway. You have to go up to Max on the course and ask him for a moon rock. The last thing before we get to something I'm actually way more excited about than I should be, and I'm excited about this as well, is we did the 2008 US Open rewatch party in a very loose technological approach, I'd say. I mean, we were literally using my crappy tripod holding my phone. It fell down a couple times.
We did kind of figure it out by the end. I liked where we put the camera behind us. That was a better idea.
So listen to this. I mean, I don't know how much you know about this. I've been a little bit more.
Almost nothing.
Yeah, I've been a little bit more in the verbiage of what's going to happen than you have. But we have sponsors that are going to be a part of our next rewatch party, which is going to be sometime this week. We're either going to do it on Thursday in prime time or on Sunday. We'll know exact times probably by the time you're listening to this on Monday or early Tuesday morning.
Can we say what we're doing?
Yeah. So, first of all, courtesy of our friends at the USGA, who, of course, I work with all summer long. Now it'll be all fall long. And Cisco have put together an interface where we're going to watch a golf event on screen with our little faces in there and guests. And Max, what are we going to watch for our first one?
The 96 US Amateur.
Who played in that one?
Tigre the Goat.
Tiger Woods.
He beat, it was at Pumpkin Ridge, Witch Hollow, I think is what the actual course is called. Not a big deal. I've been there a few times on the KornFerry.com tour. He plays Steve Scott, who not related to Michael Scott. We'll get to that later in the podcast.
Spoiler alert.
But it is an all-time great golf tournament. I have never seen it in full. I know, like most of us, I've seen a lot of the highlights, especially from Tiger's. Remember Tiger's like 3-part documentary that came out? It was like his amateur career, his majors, and then his something. It was on that. But yeah, we will be able to do a full dive. I'm really pumped that we're doing one at a course I've been to. I remember a couple shots Tiger hit, but like, That's where I have quite a few memories, and it'll be cool to watch the tournament. Plus, there's a lot of angles. Tiger comes from a million back like he always does. The coin didn't get moved. Scott told him to move it back. So it'll be fun. I'm very, very excited. And I mean, I just heard you use the word interface. So apparently this is going to be way better than the last time we did it.
There's no camera set up to make sure the TV's in there. There's no Lacey letting us know it's not centered. This is going to be... Now, they're not sending engineers our way. We're still going to probably have to put something up to watch it. But this is advanced stuff, man. This is next level. So if you're listening to this, which, I mean, I'm assuming you are since you heard what I just said, we're doing the 96 US Amateur to start. We have already a few USGA championships that we have on our radar. We have Cherry Hills with Birdie Kim, that U.S. Women's Open that was unbelievable. We have Marion U.S. Open, won by Retief Goosen, that Max played.
Won by Retief Goosen, bud. Oh, what?
Sorry. I always get Shinnecock and Marion mixed up. Justin Rose, Marion Wynn, played by Max Homa.
Play, obviously. We didn't use that twice. They knew.
Yeah, but you played in it. You were young. You're even a younger buck than you are now.
No,
now,
man,
back in 2013,
so young.
7 years your junior, or 22 years old.
Yeah, man. Wow.
Time all flies. The dreams and hopes and
we
everything ahead of you.
About 11 over par that week.
So we're gonna watch the Rose U.S. Open for sure, I believe. And what else? What else do we have? Any
well,
other ones?
We've committed to no playoffs.
Yeah, we're not going to do playoffs. But if you have any USGA championship,
I mean, I did like the 06 winged foot. I think that's still.
I think we're
going
to do that later. I think we're going to do that one of our last ones, because I think we're going to get it a little closer when we actually get to winged foot. So we're definitely going to do 06 for sure. That one was won by Retief Goosen as well. And so we're just going to, I'm kidding, obviously. I was looking at your face right now.
I was waiting for you to say something before I had to yell at you.
We're going to have guests like on this coming week with the 96 Amateur. David Fay's going to come on, who was executive director of the USGA. I think we're going to have Steve Scott come on and talk a little bit about the match. So we're going to have guests come on.
Tiger Woods has not responded yet, so it's undecided.
I did text everybody in my phone, hey, if you know Tiger, pass this message along. So we'll see if that keeps going with
the
telephone.
And I put in a contact in my phone, random 10 numbers, but wrote Tiger Woods and said, hey, bud, what do you think?
So that's happening this week. Something that already happened last night, which is happening tonight for us while we're recording this, is the Michael Jordan doc that I can only tell you already trumps all other documentaries ever about sports. Because
hey, stick to sports.
There has never been a more anticipated event on TV, because we got nothing to watch, man. We've got nothing to watch. This is something new to watch. And I can't tell you, I woke up this morning almost, it wasn't quite the feeling, but I woke up this morning like it was a major championship Sunday, knowing I had that to look forward to.
Isn't it also kind of cool? Because didn't like all of social media bully ESPN to drop it early because of this quarantine?
Yeah, I was listening to one of the producers was on Simmons' podcast, and I guess when the murmur started happening about this documentary coming out a little early when the quarantine happened, I guess there was a quick meeting and they had to get it all checked off by everybody involved. But, you know, this is going to be a great look into a team that was one of the best sporting teams ever, with one of the most famous people in the world on that team, and it's footage we've never seen. I'm really excited about it. What's going to be really cool is Michael Jordan is going to be, in a way, live on your screen for people that are too young to know what Michael was like when he played. This is going to be like watching Michael Jordan live almost, you know?
I'm super stoked. So I actually grew up on, my parents had bought like a 6 VHS set of the 6 Bulls championship. So I don't remember what it's called, but.
I thought for a second you meant your parents had, you know how you had the 6 disc changer? Back in the day,
I thought
your parents. You know, like the CD.
Yes, with CDs. You're right.
I thought it was a device that you could put six VHS in, and it would rotate between. I said I'd never seen that before.
Yeah, that would have been a good invention. But no, they did not invent that. But they did buy the 6 set.
Okay, makes
the
way
the
more sense.
Video set. So I actually can remember the 6. It would go through the season, but mostly focus on the playoffs, and it was awesome. It's really cool that they're doing this, because I do have a vague memory of these videos. This is obviously pretty much the reason I fell in love with basketball, and especially Michael Jordan. So it'll be cool to see now the interviews that go behind it. What I am most excited about of all the things of this whole documentary coming out is that Michael Jordan has just mentioned how everyone's going to think he's a dick by the end of this documentary. And I think that's good, because I'm so tired of hearing about these fans say, oh man, you know, Tiger Woods is a jerk and Michael Jordan was a jerk and these mega superstars are jerks. Listen, if you have the guts to get in front of all the best basketball players in the entire world, and for Michael Jordan's case, ever and look at every one of them and say, I'm going to beat your brains in. You think that guy's a nice guy? Like, that guy's a competitive dude. Like, that guy wants to end your career. I mean, these little stories now that come out and we're like chuckle about them. Like Michael, the one that came out recently about the Hawks, where he went into the Hawks locker room before the game, went up to the dude guarding him and said, you're guarding me tonight. You better stretch because it's going to be a long night for you. And he leaves and drops 61 points. Everyone's like, oh, Michael, that's so cool. Dude, if that happened to you, you'd be like, that's a biggest jerk I've ever met in my life. Like, go to your locker room. But that's right. What makes these people the best. Not good, not great, like the absolute best. Tiger Woods didn't even talk to Tony Finau the whole Sunday at the Masters. And they're kind of boys from what I understand. You think that's a nice thing to do, but people who compete understand that that's sure. You could file it under he's a jerk, but that's exactly why he will absolutely be forever remembered as probably the best basketball player ever. And that's what I'm super excited to watch, is so people will understand that, yeah, man, he was a jerk and that's cool. You can be a jerk, like, if you're going to be the absolute best. Not that it's okay to be mean, but like, that's not it. He's not being mean. He just demands excellence and he thinks he's the main dude. So he's going to act like it, because that's how you have to be. If everybody's coming for your crown, you better be like the toughest, kind of most brash dude around. And I thought that he was from memory. And, you know, that's what all, at least my favorite athletes I can remember that have been at the top of their sport have been like. So it'll be cool. We kind of have glorified Michael Jordan to all extents, and he is a, you know, awesome human and all that, but he could be a jerk. Like, we don't have to say right. He's the nice dude.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to play up people. We can present them as they are if they allow us to do that. That's something that I feel like in our current landscape, everything that's produced, everything that's out there, that's a vision of someone is usually the vision of someone within the circle of that professional athlete. You know, I mean, even outside of sports, I mean, you know, Taylor Swift came out with something. There's been something on it was on Hulu or something about Hillary Clinton. And I feel like these things are produced internally, so they're going to show the good side of these people, and they're obviously not going to touch on stuff that's negative. And what I'm so excited about with this is I feel like Jordan understands that they're going to touch on negatives. They're going to touch on stuff that makes him look bad, and he understands that's part of it, because to be unreal, like you said, you've got to want to win and you've got to want to humiliate. And I feel like those are the two qualities of the goatee types that I feel like sometimes gets lost. You know, you think of Kobe. Kobe wanted to step on your throat when he beat you. Larry Bird, same way. I feel like that was Serena. I've always felt like that with Federer. You know, Federer was such a smiling, nice guy, and he always said the right thing. But you'd see moments in matches when Federer would have that look in his eye, like, I want to humiliate.
Yeah, I want you to quit. I want you to quit tennis, because right. you just realize after this match that you aren't ever going to be good enough. Like, I'm that much better than you. The other thing too, especially with the Kobe stuff, because obviously I was a little bit older and more in with that whole when he was at his height. And so many people would see these videos, you know, he would be yelling at Sasha Vujacic and telling people, even like his arguments with Shaq, like telling people to, you know, they got to work harder. And he was obviously pretty, you know, rude and mean about it. And people from the outside would say, man, like I would hate to play with him. He's such a bad teammate. Well, I didn't hear very much of any bad about any teammate that was, or anybody that was on his team that said he's a bad teammate. That's what it takes to push people. I can't walk up to somebody on my team and very calmly say, hey man, like, it'd be really nice if you worked harder. And then you don't work harder. Then the next week I walk up to you, I'm like, hey man, like, Shane, it'd be really nice if you could like get here a little earlier. Okay. And then the next week you don't. And it's fine. Like, If I want to win, and what Kobe does and what Michael obviously does, and we're going to see in this documentary, is, hey, dude, like, I'm going to get in your face if you don't start focusing and start treating this like I'm treating it. And that's like the stuff that the teammates who you play with, like the Steve Kerrs of the world and the Sasha Vujacic's and the pals, like, appreciate so much, that they're like, yeah, this guy wants to win for him. But yes, he needs all of us to do it. And he's going to push us all to be the absolute best we can be. And there's going to be a couple types of people that can handle that, or that can or can't handle that. You're going to have the people who take to it and complain about it, or you're going to have the people who like hear it and they're like, okay, I'm gonna listen, and I'm gonna see how far I could push my potential. And those are the people who come out later and say, yeah, you know, Kobe, Michael, like, those were great teammates because they really pushed me. But yeah, sure, they're not like nice about it. And that's what Michael Jordan's getting at when he says, that we're going to all think that at the end of this documentary. And I love that. I want to see that.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back.
So we're talking about this because we're getting to something we're going to do today. And it's as simple as it gets, Max. We're doing our top five favorite Michaels. That's it. No rules, no regulation.
This is
doesn't
hard.
Have to be sport. It can be anything in the world. Top five Michaels. Do you want to start or do you want me to start?
I'll start. Are we doing it in order?
I've got mine in order. You always, okay. You never get yours in order. I feel like you throw them in there loosely because you're all always right. Editing.
All right, yeah, yeah. I'll do it in order. I'll start at number five.
You have it locked in.
Yeah. So I want to lead though. My two actual favorite Michaels are Michael Kim and Michael Weaver from my college team, but
no,
they felt too close, so I'm not going to use them.
You, no, you. The,
best
you can't,
college,
you can't have
best
your best
college golf team ever. No,
I understand. You know what I did notice when I was doing this? Not a lot of great Michael golfers.
Yeah, I couldn't really think of one.
Michael Campbell was really all I could think of.
Michael Campbell, that's a good one. All right, so my number five is Al Michaels. Shout out to you, broadcaster. Definitely the best broadcaster ever. I'm just kidding. I don't mean to disappoint you, Shane, but Al Michaels is, I'm assuming, your Tiger Woods.
he's unbelievable. He's 70. He's on my list as well. 75 years old, Max.
Yeah,
and he's
he
still
is
rocking.
A stud. His voice just like puts a smile on my face because I know some cool sports are on. You know, I know something awesome is happening. I don't know the ins and outs of broadcasting, but I don't think I've ever watched something Al Michaels has done and not like had some fun watching it. So he is my number five.
So I have him on my list as well. And I was just going through his career online today. I mean, the dude has done everything, every sport, every event, Olympics. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Miracle on Ice, all of these things Al Michaels was a part of. It's really incredible. And like I said, think about 75-year-olds that you know. Think about how sharp he is each and every Sunday when he does that with Chris Collinsworth. It's pretty impressive. Al Michaels, great choice. Didn't know if you'd go with the last name. I'm very impressed. My number five, Michael Schur. Do you know who this is?
I do not. Elaborate. Okay.
So Michael Schur is a guy that back in my collegiate day, when sports blogs were just starting to kind of figure out what they were, I had no idea who this guy was. I only knew that my favorite sports blog in the world was this website called Fire Joe Morgan. It was the worst looking website ever, and it was just unbelievable writing and ripping of bad stories or bad broadcasting, and it was the most intelligent prose you'd ever read in your life. The criticism was like next level stuff, and it came out that finally it was this guy Michael Schur and his buddies that were doing this. Oh, by the way, also he's one of the co-creators of Parks and Rec, one of the writers of The Office, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, one of his, Masters of None, he was a producer on. Basically all the real funny stuff on TV, this guy's got one hand in. Big fan, great on Twitter, Ken Tremendous, Michael Schur, number five.
So he's basically got like the brain I wish I had. Like the
yeah,
Office,
I mean,
Brooklyn Nine-Nine, all that.
Parks and Rec, you know, I mean, when you go through what he has done and what he's been a part of, I mean, he basically wrote on The Office and then just kept moving up in Hollywood, especially on the TV side and within comedy. So, and I mean, Parks and Rec, if you're a co-creator of Parks and Rec, I feel like, I mean, Parks and Rec's one of my favorite shows out there. How many great characters are in that show? You know, unique,
yeah.
You know, hammer characters, unreal in that.
Also,
in that,
it's very fitting you put him at number five because it's like, who's my favorite Michaels? Michael, sure. You know, just kind of fit him right in there.
So
who's your number four?
Number four for me was Al Michaels. That's where I had him. So I'll let you go.
All right, I will go. My number four, Michael Phelps. Michael Phelps needs no introduction. The greatest Olympian of all time. Absolute freak of nature. All the legendary stories. I can't imagine planning for something 4 years away. Like that's impossible for me to grasp. When I was 25 to where I am now, I can't remember anything, let alone if you would have said like, hey, if you stick to this, like here, you know, for 4 years, like you will be in a position to maybe win a gold medal. Like at that point, I feel like I should like be the emperor of the world if I could stick to that.
Like what if the Masters or the US Open was it was just one event every 4 years and you could play in things leading up to it, but nobody would really know what's going on outside of the most hardcore of hardcore fans.
So, Shane, it's interesting you mentioned that. That's Q School. if you're on the mini tours, that's Q School. I mean, you could play some events here and there, but you're waiting all year for pre-qualifying.
But that's once a year. This isn't once every 4 years.
Well, I guess. But I guess that's a great point. The only difference is if you don't have a job if you don't get through Q School. But yeah, you're right. Every 4 years. Yeah, that'd be wild. I would be. Man, I would be pretty bad that first year. I don't think I'd do so well the first
year. If your major championship was in 2024, how you go through your day today preparing has got to be wild. You go, you know what? I don't need to go swim today.
No, it's I'm good. I don't need to go on a diet, Like, why would I start now? That's like the ultimate college. Like, okay, you have 3 months to do this 10-page essay. We're going to give you 3 months. And you're like, that's so easy. And then like fast forward, I don't know, 2.9 months. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God,
11 pages.
I started this thing a long time ago. What was I doing? And then you start blaming your teacher. It's their fault. So yeah, I would, knowing my track record from college, I would be horrendous at the Olympics.
What was your study process like in college? Were you a cram night before?
Mega cram. It was
okay,
just
good.
I would shove as much as I possibly can into my brain. And it's almost just like a research project in the sense that I want to see how much I can remember and how much can be spit back out. And then when I get the grades of the test, it was always so exciting because it's like, ooh, like whether it was good or bad, it was just like interesting. I was like, oh yeah, well, I really didn't, you know, like we'll try a different method next time. I was not good at the only time, which is, this is so sad because it's the only time I nailed, like aced a test in college. But our finals, you know, schedule worked out randomly. You know, some classes we would do a dead week before finals where you could study, or a lot of people, you know, studied other things, but you could study. And then, you know, starting that Monday, you would possibly have your first paper due or possibly have your first final. Well, one of the years, maybe my sophomore year, I just so happened that all of my stuff was either done before, you know, the dead week, or it was papers. I only had one final, and it was on the last final Friday at 7 p.m. of the last week of school. Technically, it's literally the last time possible. I had nothing to do for 2 weeks, and I decided that I was still going to have fun. I also still had to get ready for like golf and whatnot because we had national championship. But I decided, I was like, every day I'm going to go to the library for an hour. And I'm just going to look, like, I'm going to study for an hour, maybe 2 hours, but every day, because times that by, you know, 14, I'm going to have 14 hours under my belt at least. And this is essentially what I learned everyone does, like all throughout college to graduate. So I was like, I'm going to do it. And by the end of those 2 weeks, I take this test and I nail it. And I'm like, yeah, man, look how easy was that? Like I notched out 1/24th of every day. It was so simple. You know what happened my junior year? Totally forgot I ever did that.
That was a little too much work. I can make a B minus on this test.
I could make a B minus by learning it all in the last hour before the night before the actual test. So that was that was mine. I'm assuming you were a much more savvy studier.
You know, I was journalism, so I was print, not broadcast, and so a lot of my last 2 years of college was writing. Were our finals or were our big projects. I was a big go in at about 10 p.m. the night before it was due and write from about 10 or 11 p.m. until about 5 in the morning. And that was how I did it.
That is where they say your brain is just peaking, firing on all cylinders.
I was shotgunning Red Bulls and writing, just powering them out. 12 pages, no big deal. That's the weird thing about my line of study was I didn't have a lot of tests after basically the electives. After outside of electives, it's almost all writing or projects in term of journalism. So we didn't have a lot of, you know, A, B, C, D types of tests after the first couple of years. My number three, by the way, getting back to our favorite Michaels, my number three is Phelps as well. So far we have two of the same. Considering all of the Michaels in the world, I'm going to go Phelps. I remember Beijing, it had to have been one of the most fun things. You know, we had
that was the best.
That was we said this in our 2008 US Open rewatch party. Dan Hicks, who of course called Tiger's putt on the 72nd hole at Torrey Pines. Hicks had a run. Tiger Torrey playoff beats Rocco Phelps the next month in Beijing. That's a pretty good 1-2 run.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So who's your number three? Oh, your number three was Phelps.
Three's Phelps, yeah.
So you go with your next one. Go with your two.
All right. Number two is Michael Jordan.
Whoa, number two.
Number two is Michael Jordan. Favorite Michaels. I was, you know, sixth, seventh, eighth grade, that final three-peat run. I watched every Bulls game I could. I was in East Texas. I wasn't a Bulls fan, but you couldn't miss the games. I love going back and watching old Jordan highlights because I feel like there are certain times, time periods in sport where when you go back and watch stuff, they just don't look like they look now. Jordan looks like the guys look now. You know, he's jacked. He's in unbelievable shape. He could jump out of the gym. He was tough. He hit all these shots. I feel like he was before his time in terms of how he approached the game. And we've already rattled off about his mentality and such about being a winner. So
there's only two people in sports that I mean this, like this isn't an exaggeration and being around it quite a bit too, like knowing what stories are real and which ones are fabricated or maybe exaggerated. He and Tiger are the only people where some of these mythical stories come out about like certain ways that they've done things or maybe just like types of games or how they prepped and like random little nuggets where I'm like, yeah, like I believe that. Like I've never heard anything dispelling it. Like I know a handful of people who are friends with Michael Jordan. They said like he'll be like 30 pounds overweight, let's say, like recently, and he'll say, oh, I gotta cut weight, and he'll be like fully back to like supreme physical like shape in a week. And it's
does
just
he
like,
have a Peloton? Is he no, battling I mean, you on dude, the Peloton?
I bet you if he looks at the Peloton, he could make it go faster than I could. So he's one of those guys. Tiger, same thing. You know, I know that there's an old story. I don't know if everybody's heard this one, but Tiger goes to Nike, has five drivers. They asked him which one he liked the best. They were all the exact same type of or same shaft or something. They asked him which one he liked the best. He said the lightest one. They said, Tiger, we weighed them. They're all the exact same. He goes, no, the one's lighter. They go in and one of them is 74 grams and the rest were 75. And they couldn't believe it. That story sounds unbelievable. If it happened to literally anyone else in the world, I'd say it was a lie or complete BS. Tiger, I do believe that that's true. All the stories I've heard about him, no one's dispelled that one. Like, I believe that. And that's how Michael is to me. Shocker, Michael is also on my list for all those reasons. He's like an alien, man. Like I know the stats, and I think the sad part is the only part of Michael Jordan I don't like has nothing to do with him. It has everything to do with everybody who has to keep bringing up that he's better than LeBron James and all this stuff. Like I'm so over the debates. It's not even a debate. It's just stupid at this point. It's just we should just appreciate them more, both of them. They're very different players. What I love about Michael Jordan now has become so much less the basketball and more the mindset that he's had through sports, his competitive nature, his absolute hunger to just be the best he possibly can. It's why I love Kobe Bryant. So that's why he's on my list with a million other reasons. But
is he number one?
He is number two, actually.
Oh, no way.
So as I've become
after
more,
you called me out on
no, I just couldn't believe that we both did. I was shocked. I put him to two and I like shed a tear. But as I become like a like more of an athlete myself and like understood that like being a professional and the process of all this, I've really started to appreciate more his work ethic, his attitude, his drive, way less than what I did when I was a kid, which was his dunks and his fadeaway and his you know stats like that. That's still amazing or whatever, but they've become to me more of just a byproduct of all this cool stuff that I try to harness myself, and that is why he will always be in my top two favorite Michaels.
Well, not, I mean, not all. You never know. You never know who might come around. There could be a new Michael.
His is going to be hard because, again, he's the Kobe thing with me. Like, I mean, my like many people, I'm not even close to alone, but like my Twitter handle is MaxHoma23. My favorite number is 25, but I didn't have, but 23 because of Michael Jordan. And not because I love Michael Jordan. I love what he has kind of instilled in me on accident. Like I want to be somebody that is talked about like Michael is in his work ethic and in his off the basketball court or outside of just games. Or physical abilities. Like I want them to talk about like, man, that guy was tough. That guy, you know, all his intangibles. Like I love so much, and he will always have that, especially just considering that all happened. Like I said before with the six VHS set, that like, that was my first memories of basketball, where watching Michael Jordan just be a monster. And obviously that's why we're
Monstar.
Monstar. And he's got Space Jam. So
number one is the same, I'm assuming, for the both of us.
Well, I haven't done my number three yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. I skipped
and
number
this was,
three.
This is my huge reveal. I was very proud of this one. This is a lot more for just like the show of it. Michelangelo.
Oh, wow.
I just wanted to do it because it's a Michael. And I knew you wouldn't think of it. I had a feeling as I was doing this, we were going to do the same Michael. So I tried to find a creative one.
Wow, Michelangelo.
The David sculpture, Sistine Chapel. I mean, what more could you say?
Can I give you a little tip? Have you been to Florence ever?
No.
So if you go see the David, it's in this museum. And you have to wait in line forever. I mean, it is like 2 hours of waiting, okay? Down the way in this area in Florence that's about 6 blocks away, there's a replica of the David. God. It looks just like the David. It's outside. You don't have to wait at all.
See, man, now, listen, I'm just not an art guy. Like,
If there's a huge art people on here, they're going to hate that take.
They're going to hate
it. Just go walk down the way and you'll see the exact same thing. Cindy and I waited in line forever to get into this museum. It's hot. We're sweating. We want to go get a glass of wine. You know how it is. And we leave 2.5 hours later and we're walking. I go, that's the same thing we just saw.
I feel like you saying this is the same as some non-golf guy saying, yeah, like, why do you guys wait to get into Augusta National? Like, Augusta Country Club is right there. It's also 18 holes. Like,
it's got greens and bunkers and trees. It says Augusta on it. Y'all are just idiots. Just go to Augusta Country Club. I just want to say, that's a really, really good number.
Thanks, man. So who's your
really
number one?
Michael Scott, probably the same as you.
Michael Scarn, not Steve Scott's brother, Michael J. Scott. Is this Jay?
Never won a, he never won the, what is it, the Emmy for it? Is that right? Never won an
did
Emmy
he
for
not?
That? I don't think he ever did for that performance.
They 30 for 30 Twitter page came up and said they had a video, a little gif of Michael Scott shooting a basketball at, you know, in that one Office episode. And it said, what if I told you the real best Michael was Michael Scott? And it's just so perfect. Yeah, obviously we all know why he's number one. He is just probably the best character ever, shaped all kinds of sitcoms, made everything better. He is the most rewatchable. It's the most rewatchable show. I still loved it even after he left.
So I'm the same way.
But as I go back, I didn't hate it. A lot of people say that I still liked it, but the fact that I have to clarify it means that his was just so much better. His parts in that show are so much better.
So my sister has two sons, my two nephews. They play a game.
Is that how
they
that works?
That's how it is. They play a game when they watch The Office on how many minutes into each Office episode would Michael have gotten fired?
It's like in real life?
If this was really an office. There's certain episodes, it's like 5 seconds in. They're like, he would have been fired for that comment. Yeah, I don't need to say anything else. Michael
Scott,
unreal.
Do you have any for your cutting room floor?
Yeah, cutting room floor. I had Michael Johnson.
Mike Bibby.
I had Mike Bibby, U of A,
yeah,
obviously.
Mike
big
is
win
so
there.
Out,
I had the
man.
Michael's the store.
That too.
A lot of framing done there personally. You know what I feel like Michael's is in my world, and I've used this analogy before, but Michael's is like bowling. Every time I go to Michael's, I don't go a lot, But every time I go, I feel like I need to do it more. Like I should go to this place yeah. more, just like bowling. So
it's how I feel about dieting. Every time I go, every time like, this you do is it, really man, nice.
I feel way better. But you know what? I'm gonna order this pizza. We have another top five idea, and we can run through it pretty quickly. This is one of your ideas.
This is one of my ideas. This is my good idea.
I love this idea.
Thank you. Yeah. So this one is just five. Doesn't, you know, obviously order doesn't matter on this one. But it's just the most painful non-injuries in sports. So I will lead with one that I'm sure we both have, and this will set the stage for what I mean with this. But number one, putter to the shin or ankle. Everyone knows it. It's the worst pain in the world. Anyone who hasn't done it just doesn't get it. You catch it on the ankle, the back of your putter, you're swinging around being all cool. You go from looking, honestly, not very cool, but you go from thinking you're looking cool to looking like the dumbest guy on the golf course. And anytime anyone on the golf course sees their buddy do it or sees them in that position laying on the ground, they know you hit your ankle, huh? It's like, yeah, man, like that. It's like the funny bone in the ankle. And it feels like you might not be able to do anything again.
It's your foot feels like it fell off. It's awful. Yes. I've done it with multiple clubs. I've done it with a wedge before. Just one of the worst feelings ever. I'm going to follow that up with another golf one. And this one I feel like happens to me more than the club to the ankle is reach in your pocket and your finger gets impelled by the sharp pencil that's in your
pocket. I have that too, but mine's not pencil. Mine is my divot tool. I've had it for so long. It's so filed down, this thing. Like, I couldn't take this thing through TSA. I guarantee it. It is way too sharp. The pencil one, when I was a kid, not understanding how things, like, how life worked, but I always was scared I got, like, lead poisoning. I always thought the same thing.
I thought I was dead. I thought when I did that, that was it for me.
How'd you die? A little aggressive in the pocket. Yeah,
this really sharp crown quality pencil took me out of the game. You're in heaven. Like, how'd you die? Car accident. Yeah. How'd you die? Lead poisoning from a golf pencil. Poisoning.
Pretty badass way to go.
What do you got? What do you got next?
Sitting on the golf cart handle. When you try to get in real quick to the thing and you just catch it right between the cheeks, right on the tailbone, always bad. You kind of got to play it off because you don't want to look over at your buddy and tell him what happened. But that one just never felt good.
That's a really good one. I got one that's I don't know if you consider it an injury, but it's something that I always hated. I always hated it. And it's involving a sport, I guess you could say. This is when you get the water in your ear in a pool and you can't get the water out.
Yeah,
and you have to knock the side of your head. Hate that so much.
It's
so
such uncomfortable. An odd feeling. You still feel like you're under the water.
I hated that. Hated it as a kid. Hate it now if I go swimming, dive into a pool, you have it happen, a lake, ocean. Oceans are terrible. That's an awful injury.
Oceans in general.
Just there's sharks in them and then your ear thing, all out on that.
My next one is when you slam the club or just put the club in the bag, but it usually happens when you slam it in the bag and your finger gets caught between the other club and that one. That one actually is pretty freaking close to a real injury.
Yeah, that's almost
breaks my finger every time.
So I did it in high school. I was playing the course I grew
when
up
it hits
on.
Your fingernail?
Yeah, I was playing Marshall Lakeside Country Club, and the third hole's this super easy par five. So you're thinking I got to make birdie on three, or you know you're kind of screwed.
You got to.
And I didn't birdie three, and I was pissed off, and I slammed a club, and my hand was there, and I broke the fingernail. And so I had to hold, I couldn't remember if it's right or left hand, but I remember that I had to hold the club and hover the finger.
Yeah, I've had to do that too.
And I played the next four or five holes like three under.
So that was
And I was
new
like,
thing.
Maybe this is my new thing. This is how
Didn't
I gotta
last.
Play now.
Didn't last.
No, that wasn't how I kept it going, but that was
for the golf fans out there, something funny to look out for. If you ever go watch live golf or if you somehow get like the right camera angle on TV, watch somebody hit a bad shot, watch me hit a bad shot. I'll go over to my bag and Joe obviously holds onto the bag so it stays upright. If he sees me have my arm cocked up, ready to slam it, you will not see two hands fly back faster. Every caddy does it. I like to watch it when somebody hits a bad shot because you'll see they try to be subtle so that you don't know that they're, you know, completely basically laughing in their head about how dumb you're about to be. But you will see those fingers fly, hands back, arms up, like, I'm not going to be injured because you just hit a terrible 7-iron. Like, this is on you, bud.
What's your go-to current, at your current age, pissed off move on the course? And I'm saying like in tournament,
It's
you're
the
playing
slant,
an event.
Slant. I love throwing a club into the bag so that it doesn't bother anybody. It's a it's not.
So wait, when you're saying, are you you're not slamming it into the bag?
To down. No, no, no. I'm not hitting the bag. I'm slamming. I'm doing what I break my finger doing.
Gotcha. Okay. Okay.
I'm taking a risk.
You're just slamming it down in the bottom of the bag, and it's gonna bounce up.
I used to slap the putter face until I thought I broke my hand once. I used to slap the belly of the bag with the back end of the club until I broke my caddy's phone once.
Oh, nice.
I've dinged a club in there once on complete accident. I've done pretty much all of it. So now this one feels like the most discreet way to do it. I also get to like a little bit of like anger out.
Right.
And it doesn't harm anybody's anything.
It's harder to do in a non-staff bag. There's not as much room for it to slam
to
down.
Like, you almost have to throw it in there. I don't have the aim.
The carry bags, not much slamming. The grips,
how good
or
was it when
catch.
You were a kid back in the day to just take the carry bag that's got the two legs down and just snap one off?
Oh,
just clip it and just see it go flying. And then not know what to do the rest of the day.
I remember when I first started playing AJGA golf, I had and I didn't do this in anger. Now, I mean, I would get angry, so I'm not saying I was immune to this, but this was actually just, it was from a golf cart or doing something. One of my hoof or legs were bent, and I remember a golf coach came up to my mom and said, hey, he shouldn't have bent legs. The coaches look for
that. I
was
about to say that. To all the kids out there, just so you know, little secret is the coaches look to see if your legs, your golf bag are dinged up, because they want to know if your attitude's terrible or not. So keep them things straight.
I had on my list, I have a jump rope forearm injury. This happens if I do a lot of jump roping. My left forearm, not my right one, will get this weird pain in it. I call it jump rope arm. And so I don't do anything
you
to
and
it.
Everyone else, man.
Well, yeah, jump rope. Oh, it's brutal. But, you know, it's jump rope arm. I get sometimes if I do a little too much jump roping, that doesn't feel super good. Then I put the jump rope away for like a month. So, and that's a great way to work out, man. Great cardio.
Yeah, it is. I have an old, just like an old classic. I guess it's kind of an injury, but jamming your finger in a basketball, like whenever it's like not the worst, but that would always suck because it goes back to what you said. I'd have to then go play golf with my one finger extended. It was never like so bad of an injury that like I couldn't do anything else, but like it hurt and it has the most distinct sound in the world. When your finger gets jammed in by the basketball, it makes that dull.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows, like, oh, you get like the collective groan. Oh. It is a serious pain. And one pain I wanted to add that this is probably a real injury. I don't know, but I need to ask my football friends. The thing that they don't talk about in the NFL or in college football ever is the pain of like somebody hitting your shin with their helmet.
Full speed.
Like that has to hurt so bad. If the putter to the ankle hurts, this has to be like a million times worse.
How is there not an Instagram account dedicated to NFL bruises or something?
Yes. I
mean, think about holding the football and having a professional athlete
slap it.
That's 2% body fat and is just the most jacked human that runs a 4.4 going full speed, helmet into your forearm.
I'm out, man. I mean, like, this is something we're golfers. Like, we're soft. I get it. You don't need to make fun of us. But, like, this is the stuff that when I was staying, you know, playing with Aaron Rodgers in, like, when we talk, I still feel a little too nervous to bring up because, like, I know he knows I'm soft, but, like, I don't want to advertise it to him that I'm soft. I don't want to be like, hey, you know, like how you've had like some pretty bad injuries. Like how bad does it hurt when someone like hits your arm though? Like, is that pretty bad? How about a helmet to the arm? Is that pretty bad? Like,
right.
Then I just start to sound like I'm just the softest person ever, 'cause I'm like, is it anything like a putter to the ankle? You think? So Aaron, if you wouldn't mind, please let me know.
No, present it to him that way. Say, hey, Aaron, listen, dude, like 2 weeks ago,
on a scale of one to putter to the ankle,
I hit myself in the ankle with my putter. And let me tell you, I was on the ground for a few minutes. They brought a couple guys out to check on me. I was okay. I played through it.
Yeah.
But do you mind letting me know?
You get a broken ankle and then played a whole football game. You
when
Indomican like
Sue comes your way and hits you in your arm, is it the same feeling or is the ankle worse? Is the putter worse than that? Because I'd like to know. Those are really good. One of my last ones I have is when you're a younger gentleman and you're playing baseball and you get a baseball into the cup. It hurts because it hits the cup, but it doesn't really hurt anything that the cup is protecting. Yet we all have to, I feel like, we have to play it up a little bit more.
Well, it's also so full of panic fear. Sometimes right, you get hit with something and then you're like, that's supposed to hurt, and you freak out, and then everyone's like, are you okay? And you look around and you're like, it didn't hurt at all. Like, it just was supposed to hurt.
Yeah, I'm rolling around in the dirt because I was told that that's the thing I'm supposed to be doing. By the way, I really liked that a lot. That was a great one. You got any more?
No, that was it.
What was your favorite? What was your favorite one I did?
The favorite one you did, oh, obviously jump rope arm.
We can all relate.
See, the only, like, I've never made it long enough in jump roping where anything but my my calves and ankles and spirit hurt. I would say the one I like the best, because I think this, and we had the same one, is the sticking your hand in your pocket and getting stabbed by something, because I know that it's a pretty common one, but I don't think that a lot of people who play like average golf, like, or sorry, the average golfer who don't play golf a lot, I don't think it happens as much, because it's definitely not like the most common thing. Like, it doesn't happen every time I play, but it's definitely something I'm like, I put my divot tool now like down, like sharp side down. Like, I'm very a lot more focused on that. So, and anybody, I don't know why anyone listening to this podcast isn't a big golfer, but if you're not, these are the things, man. Like, these are the sketchy parts about golf. One of my favorite stories from high school, you know, high school, again, I've mentioned this before, I'll mention it probably a million times after this. Not really like a cool thing to do to be on your high school golf team. Like, you don't get all the chicks. The cheerleaders don't really pay you much mind. A lot of the, you know, your friends give you grief. So yeah, so that was, you know,
you're suffering from pencil lead poison injury.
Yeah, yeah. I also have like a swollen finger. I complain about it. Nobody seems to care. So one day we're sitting, like, this is my senior year of high school. I'm sitting in a physics class, and I'm now, you know, I don't know if anybody knew my name, but I was just like the golfer. And physics teachers going around talking about lightning and explaining how lightning is attracted to metal, you know, rods, especially up in the air, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yeah, and that's why golf is such a dangerous sport when it's thunder and lightning, because, you know, golf clubs up in the air, and everyone looks back and looks at me. And I look back at them. And I said, I told you I'm a badass. I told you I'm battling Mother Nature out here. The baddest bitch of them all.
You know, you don't want to play in a match. Mother Nature.
Because she does not lose. Between her and Father Time, they are the oh my gosh, I'm blanking. What's the basketball team that never loses? That's kind of fake, but we all love
the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yeah, they're the Harlem Globetrotters of the real world. Kind of fake. I mean, so they make the shots.
So my hometown, I was in Tornado Alley in East Texas. Okay,
you should have moved.
Listen, it wasn't my choice, man. You're born and you live in the house your parents have.
How hard do you think it is for a realtor to sell a house in a place called Tornado Alley?
So listen, guys, it's got a pool. It's got five bathrooms.
Phenomenal basement.
So my parent, this drove me crazy as a kid. But there would be tornado warnings, and my parents didn't do anything. We didn't go downstairs. We didn't huddle up in like the centralized no window closet. Nobody would ever do anything. My bedroom, Max, was just windows, and it was on the second floor. Like, if a tornado came, I was the one that was going to die by way worse than lead pencil poisoning. And so I started to take charge here. I'd be like, guys, we got to go downstairs. There's going to be a tornado. So there was a big tornado that blew through Marshall when I was probably in seventh or eighth grade. And the sirens, we had those big sirens, it didn't go off. They never went off to warn us, and people lost their minds. So then the siren, the decision to fix this was, let's have the sirens go off every time there's a thunderstorm. Okay. So we can never run into this issue again. Because, you know, maybe a little F2 pops up, right? And so the sirens would go off anytime like a pop-up thunderstorm would roll through. My Uncle Doug, who lives in Phoenix and has lived in Phoenix most of his life, was out in Marshall. We were going to go play golf. We were driving to the golf course as the tornado sirens are going off. Now, this is a guy that lives in Phoenix just wide-eyed looking at us like, what are we doing? Like, it's good, man. We're fine. It's going to be okay. Mother Nature's not messing with us today. But when you grew up in my area, the lightning strikes were a thing you really had to think about as a golfer.
Yeah.
You had to avoid the course.
Anytime I go to like the Midwest and that the once a week testing siren goes off, always forget that it's just a testing one. It could be bright and sunny out and
you dive down.
Oh, the moment it goes off, I'm looking around like, are we leaving? Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? And everyone's like, what do you mean?
What's I'm protocol?
Like, siren things going off. Like, what do we do? Like, it's obviously something bad's happening. They're like, no, it's just a test. I'm like, how do you know? Like, do we want to risk this?
Is it a different beeping sound? What's the SOS cadence
it's
here?
Like the, it's like the horn when the golf is called off. It's like, you know, whether it's like the long one, the two short blasts, you know which one's which. I need to know that for the Midwest so I could stop embarrassing myself.
Have you ever played in a shotgun event where they started with an actual shotgun?
Oh, hell yeah.
Those are really phenomenal.
I mean, I don't know if it's a real shotgun, but it sounds like a shotgun.
Yeah, that's always made me a little bit more excited.
Yeah, you feel like you're not breaking tradition.
We're gonna take a quick break and be right back.
All right, so we have a few flights. You already did your, what'd you do? Your
proudest thing of the week. Yeah, proudest
best
moment.
Thing, your proudest moment. You have a feel-good Friday?
I have a feel-good Friday. This was a submission by somebody on Twitter. So they had written to me, I guess, a while back about just having like a tough time with life, just, not really, things not going their way. Said they had been really getting motivated to get back into it. I mean, they may or may not have said it's because they listened to one of my podcasts, Not Laying Up. But I mean, hey, that's neither here nor there. But he did mention in this, it is quite a long message, and he did apologize at the end for it. All good when it's good news, it's all good. Well, he mentioned that just things haven't been good. Had gotten a new job after all that. Ended up losing his job. Was just applying for a job with the USGA and was like all in on the interviews and everything. Then this COVID came up. So that obviously fell through. His wife has been going through some serious health issues. Things are getting a little bit better. I know it starts off like not very good feel good Friday, but he just said that he's just been super positive lately, really working hard just to get everything back to normal. Pretty much making lemonade out of lemons is essentially what he said. He wrote it in saying that this would be a good feel good Friday, and he just wanted it shared. And you know what? I appreciate people who can put a positive spin on some not so good times. Rooting for your wife, Brian Cox. And I am very happy that you let me join in on a little bit of this journey. And I know that you're going to keep on keeping on. And I appreciate people who don't kind of buckle and they just kind of put their head down and keep fighting. And I know pretty much everyone, it's all relative, but everyone's kind of doing that right now in their own way, whether it's you're sick of quarantine or whether you actually are sick and things are rough or obviously economic issues. So, I appreciated reading that. And, I can't wait for the happy ending that will come, at the end of this.
Yeah. The only thing that would have made that better is if his name was Michael Cox and you'd have put him in your top five Michaels.
My top five.
Golly,
but
so
then it would
close.
Have been brutal because I would have left him out and then I would have felt really bad.
And then you got to this point and felt really dopey.
I've been in a bad spot. So where you think it's the best thing was actually the worst thing.
It worked out. And you also have a good idea, bad idea, right?
This isn't from me. This is from, Jeremiah, this guy named Jeremiah, also on Twitter, messaged me a couple nights ago and asked if I would join him and his buddies on a Zoom call. They were all going to have mustaches and I was going to like rate them or roast them, whatever. So I was like, hey, man, honestly, if it works out, I will hop on for a minute or two and let's see. Well, last night I get a DM and he goes, hey, we're about to go on. Like, can you come on? And we were about to sit down for dinner. I'm like, I got a minute. Like, let's do this for a quick minute. And this was all spawned off. I think Katie Nolan was the one who started it, but she had a big Zoom chat and had all of her famous friends try to grab
celebrities,
one random famous person to say something. So this person was just like, decided to just have random people come through and just like talk. And whether it's your friend or maybe somebody obviously like this, where you randomly reach out to a stranger on Twitter. So I jumped on. Was on for like a minute or two, got to see a bunch of mustaches. This is going to be really bad radio, but everybody went straight into like right as I got on the call, they all just like put their face really close to the camera and like showed their upper lip. So that was like not only a good laugh, but like incredibly, incredibly creepy. But I had fun.
How are the stashes?
Two of them didn't really have them. It's like, it's essentially how I would grow a mustache. It would be like me saying I had a mustache when I was like 11. Like, okay. Yeah, there might've been a little peach fuzz, but like, there's not like actually a mustache. There were some really good ones. One guy just had a beard, so didn't count.
That's disqualified.
Jeremiah's mustache was quite nice. But there was one guy, I can't remember his name, but his mustache was, I told him it wasn't the best mustache of the group, but it fit him the best. Like he looks like he should be a mustache guy. The way
Is that a thing? Wait a minute. I didn't know that was a thing.
He might have made it a thing. Like it looked like if he didn't have the mustache, he wouldn't have looked as like him as he did with the mustache.
Yeah.
So that was fun. But the good idea is, I think that's a good idea. More Zoom calls and just try to get random people to pop in here and there. Whether it doesn't need to be like golfer or athlete or something like that. It could just be like random friends maybe that you haven't talked to in a while, or just I know a lot of people are like friends with their friends' moms or dads, kind of like have those, you know, cool relationships. Like maybe pop one of them in, have them chat. They'll appreciate it. But I really enjoyed it. It was actually hilarious. Like it was very, very fun.
It would be fun to get the most awkward friend you have and just send them the Zoom info with no other knowledge. And so maybe you're on a work Zoom and they just pop in.
Hello?
This is Fred here. It's my buddy Fred. Hello. Hey, what's going on? What are you doing?
I don't have anything prepared.
I don't even know where you work. Did you actually get to rate them and pick a winner?
I picked a winner. I did. I think I did say though at the end that my favorite was there's the one who looked like the best. Like he just looked like he belonged. Like
gotcha.
He just was like the mustache king. And then I have a best thing I heard.
Yep.
Super selfish one. Ron McAfee, who started those one. Remember I showed you yesterday those one protein bars?
Yeah.
In gas stations nationwide and pretty much everywhere else. He found out through a friend of mine, Dave DeGorder, that I really liked them, and he sent me $5. So that was the best. The best thing I heard this week was that they were going to be sent to my house. The best thing that happened was it actually got to my house.
The best thing you heard this week was like the doorbell when it was delivered?
No, that Dave said Dave said that I will be getting these bars. I really like them, man.
By the way, I've never seen you more excited for five bars before.
No, five boxes.
Oh, $5. You didn't even give me one.
Well, I only
did you have extras?
I only have one yesterday.
Will you bring one on Monday?
I'll bring one today. Get it?
Nice.
I'm figuring it out.
Media man right here, Max Homa. So media mogul.
Also, pretty sad the best things I hear this week are just, I'm getting free food.
Oh, hey, I got a best thing I heard this week.
Please go on. This is my new favorite best thing I heard this week. This. Hearing a pro stumble.
I'm trying. He's not R. He's the FedEx UPS driver in our area. And you know what? I don't know if it's FedEx or UPS. Man. I think he is.
This guy means a lot to you.
You know what? I think he's a UPS guy. I'm going UPS. Our UPS driver in our area is a super nice guy that's a big golfer. And he was dropping something off a couple days ago, and he goes, I just paused Get a Grip. And
no
he was
dropping way. Off.
Yeah. He was listening Man. To Get a Grip.
You would
paused
think,
it.
You would think with how nice it is, the least you could do is know what company he works for.
Listen, hey, I know it wasn't DHL. I'll give him that. I know it wasn't DHL.
When he listens to this, I hope that
he's
just
confused.
One time for me. If there's a box that says this side up for Shane, put it the other way. Put it upside down. Just one time. Just
what if it's shampoo?
Softly. What?
It's what if it's conditioner
close.
Leaks everywhere?
It's going to be close.
Hey, you don't know that. You don't know who sealed it.
Do you use shampoo ever?
Yeah,
you can seal
shampoo
it,
a lot. You don't. You do you use shampoo? Use conditioner?
Sure, I use a little two in one. A little two in one magic.
Ooh, I don't think that's good for your scalp.
Well, it's from Head and Shoulders, so yes, it is. That's just a fact.
What does your wife say about your shampoo conditioner choice?
I don't know if she has a say in that one. She has a say in a lot of things, but
I would get grilled if I threw a two-in-one in my shower.
What? How pretentious are you guys?
Because it's not good for your scalp, Max. You want to have your hair for a while, don't you?
Dude, my thing literally says number one, doctor recommended. I will take a picture. It's literally number one. Can you get better than number one? No, you can't.
No. You know what? Head and Shoulders two-in-one. It's the Michael Jordan of things in Max's shower.
Michael Scott.
That's all I got. You got anything else?
Man, I got it. I ran out of things like 20 minutes ago.
That's all we have. Thanks for listening. We have more details on the 1996 U.S. Amateur Rewatch Party. Oh, we need your help real quick. If you think of a good name that includes Get a Grip or Get A or Grip for our rewatching party idea, send it to us on Twitter at Shane Bacon, at MaxHoma23. We've thought about Get a Grip on golf history or Get a Historical Grip, things like that, where we look back. But if you've got a great idea, let us know. If we use your idea, we will pay you no dollars, not $1, nothing. You know what? If we use your idea, Max will block you on Twitter. That's what's going to happen.
Dude, no, man.
You said, why not?
No.
There's got to be consequences. How many people do you have blocked on Twitter?
3.
You really know the number?
Yeah, because it's so little. And I want to get it down to 0, but I'm slowly hoping that they like delete their account so I can just like, you know, take the block off.
Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. If you like the podcast, rate and review it on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen. Thank you so much, Max. Appreciate it. While people are listening to this right now, you and I might be out on the golf course.
Yeah. And everybody, please wash your hands.
Wash them. See you next week.
Bye.
Get a Grip with Max Homa and Shane Bacon is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.